Welcome to Innovation and Leadership. I'm Jess Larson. On this show, excited to have Devin Klein. Devin, thanks for doing this.
Jess, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
You bet. So I'm gonna go over a little bit of the research I did, and then I want you to correct me on all the things I got wrong, okay?
Yeah, you got it. Fire away.
Okay, so I love having people like you on who like started bootstrapping. So when I heard you started with like you started this entire fitness brand with $600 in a parking lot, I was pretty excited. So correct me if any of these numbers are wrong. You guys have almost 400 locations open already and like 550 signed. Close on that one?
You're good so far. Do your three for three so far.
You have done like over $725 million in total volume already.
Yeah, we're going to break a billion here pretty soon. It's got to be in like February, March or something. I remember putting out a video like late last year. Looking at it, I was like, damn, we're pretty close here. This is cool. I wasn't trying to do that. I just looked up and it happened to be there. But yeah, I got to check it. Maybe like mid-March or something.
Yeah. And in 41 states.
41 states.
And over like 2 million social media followers across all the things.
Now, let me caveat this one because you have to say across the things, because if you go to like you burn YouTube, there's like 100,000, or burn the main channel on Instagram, there's 100,000. But then, you know, you have all the other locations that have their Instagram accounts. So I'm including all of those into it. And, you know, I'm just getting my thing kind of off the ground. I've been head down building the business, you know, for 12 years since 2012. And, you know, now we're coming up for some air to teach people how to scale it. So that's my goal.
Yeah. So for starters, congratulations. Thank you. So I would love to talk about some of the things that when I heard your story, I was like, oh yeah, we got to have this guy on. So coming out of being a pro baseball player in the San Francisco Giants system, you decide you're going to do fitness and you thought, you know, there's no oversaturation there. That should be easy pickings. Tell me about showing up and competing where there can be a low barrier to entry and where a lot of people think it's oversaturated and just, you know, having an absolute rocket ship of growth here.
Yeah, well, I think the oversaturation hype is kind of a myth. I'm not sure I can quite call it a myth, but if you look at just the dynamics of competition, you know, competitive, you know, to me, competition is like where all parties are successful. And I look at, you know, the statistics around obesity in this country and being overweight in this country, and you're in the high 60s, and it's gone from 65 up to 68.5, almost to 70% of our country since I started in 2012 and out of a parking lot. So you're in this competitive space, but it's not the message clearly with the competitors in the space isn't resonating, because I think it should be the opposite way. I think 30% of people maybe like have true issues that they struggle with, and the other 40% delta, that swing is just lifestyle, just knowledge. It's understanding, you know, that you have people in your corner. And you know, so we can talk about the competitive landscape in my industry all day long, but I will not accept that it is saturated or oversaturated or hyper or all. It is competitive. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of competitive people, but, you know, I think a lot of room at the top for great management teams, great leadership teams to really do some great work over the next couple of decades.
Well, as a fellow podcaster and YouTuber, I would apply the same thing there. Yeah, there might be 80 million channels on YouTube or 5 million podcasts out there, but there is not an oversaturation of great content.
You said it much more succinctly than I did. That was good.
And I think about this all the time. I mean, like in podcasting, I think it's something like 50% of shows have 4 or less episodes, and like 80% of shows have 18 or less episodes. Like if you just stick it out till the 19th episode, you're automatically in the top 20% out of 5 million shows, right?
It's like the quickest manifestation of the adage, like never quit, never quit, never quit. If you just go 19 episodes, you know, I did see that stat, like 98% of them fall off within a handful of episodes. That's crazy. But so, look at you're on like 900, dude, and you're like blowing it up. Congratulations.
Thanks. So what I really want to know is how you carved your own magnet that is not just attracting customers, but attracting franchisees across the country.
It's a great question, phrasing it in terms of a magnet, because I think that's what it is. And, you know, If there is a top spot in any industry, I think that's because there is a opportunity to have better leadership. And when I moved to Charlotte, my wife actually brought us to Charlotte because we both grew up in Battle Creek, Michigan together. We grew up, we met when we were 12 years old. We started Burn together in a parking lot with our last $600. You know, she was paying my cell phone bill while I was playing in minor leagues with the Giants. You know, we just looked up one day after starting Burn in a parking lot and we're like, holy crap. Like, we just had 150 people in this parking lot on a Saturday. We've got something like really, really special here. And that's the magnet. It's the community. We're in the 96 degree North Carolina sun on a Saturday. I was making my members, there's 150 of them out there doing plyometric jump squats, if you're familiar with those, and then sprinting right after that. And if you know anything about those two dynamic exercises back to back, it takes a lot of what we call threshold to be able to do that. People were falling over and I wasn't trying to make them fall over. But what happened next is what is the answer to your question. It's the magnet. What makes this brand so special is that unprompted, the members, the ladies who were in the first couple groups, maybe the bit more physically athletic and gifted ones, they ran back and they grabbed off the ground the other ladies, the other members who were falling down, scraping their knees. And they picked them up on their shoulders and they ran them 75 yards across, you know, this gravel finish line in the parking lot. And Morgan and I got in the car right after that. We both looked at each other and we were like, wow, this is something special. And almost in that moment, we decided to franchise. And this was in 2014. So by 2015, we had announced that we were going to be a franchise and awarded over 200 locations to those very same people, in the parking lot. It was our members who wanted to touch other people's lives the same way that we did. And we did kind of a hub and spoke thing across the Southeast. Boom. And that was the start to the brand.
And tell people, you know, for people who haven't seen the videos or don't know anything about it, tell us what's different about Burn.
Okay, so you're going to get, let's start with like the differentiators. Like somebody just outside looking in, they're shopping cars. This car's red, that car's blue, like the obvious differentiators. Well, it's Child Watch that really is the magnet, right? To use your language, that allows moms to come in and for free. Child Watch has always been a part of our membership, because we knew that was a barrier to helping moms really, you know, get and stay fit. And they have things like stroller strides, and these are great programs, but, you know, to come in and to do some professional demanding training, right, that really forces them to become mentally stronger and to be able to handle things in their day. I think that was really part of it, is like having that security of just being able to, you know, have my child be in Child Watch. They're right there looking at me, working out, doing really hard things. It also makes me feel good emotionally that my child is in an environment where they're watching mom and now mom and dad do great things. So you have that. You have 45 minutes. I could go through the other ones pretty quickly. That's the real, I think, magic behind it. But it's 45-minute workouts, always changing. You know, you're not going to get bored at Burn because they're always different. You've never done the same workout twice. Still to this day, we come up with a new workout every day. We call it the protocol, you know, and you have personal trainers like myself. I've trained 15,000 Burn Bootcamp, we call it sessions or camps, and I'm a trainer by heart, man. I love it to death. It is my craft. And then I became an entrepreneur around the craft. And yeah, I think having this army of trainers who felt much like I did, right? Like after baseball, I had this huge void in my heart. Like you get released from the team that you're on, right? And that just leaves this void of camaraderie. And so many college athletes, high school athletes, they feel this. Not that you have to be a college or high school athlete to be a trainer, but a lot of them just naturally are because they know their way around the weight room. And you leave these team environments, then you go into the fitness industry and everything's super, you know, bifurcated. There's groups everywhere. And to make it, right, you either have to be a great entrepreneur, or you've got to go out and you've got to work at the Ritz-Carlton and get your yoga certification and do, you know, the whole nine yards. And so personal trainers, right, really bring the glue to our program. And they're the ones that are really the leaders of the community along with our franchise partners. So I think those are the differentiators. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you think about having a system so robust that, you know, having, you know, almost 400 locations can't break it. I would love to talk about EOS or BOS, as you call it, and these kind of things.
Yeah. So for those of us that aren't familiar, Traction by Gino Wickman, a classic book, one of my favorites. It's an operational infrastructure book, and I'm not sure if you guys talk about it here on the podcast too much, but I was this young guy looking for framework for the organization because we're growing real fast. And I, you know, one of those ego problems you get in your own way when you're trying to figure it out, and you're like, "Oh, I'm smart. I can put this together." And what do we mean by operational infrastructure, right? What we mean is a common language. We need a common business language amongst, you know, at the time, hundreds of people and growing now into thousands, where we all need to be cohesive. Because if we're going to be on the same mission and a community, you know, then you need a common language. And so, okay, I can do that. And we try it, and I can't get any, you know, I try to build something myself. Nobody in the leadership team agrees with it, right? It's like, there's all little nuances of it. Try that for a couple years over and over. And then I find OKRs by Jim Doerr. And I know that you're probably familiar. You do work with Google, correct? I know. Yep. That Google ran their infrastructure on OKRs for at least a while. And so we tried that. We had so many young, hungry, ambitious people. That was kind of loose, and it wasn't really definitive for them. And so then we moved to EOS, Entrepreneur Operating System. And the classic book, Traction, is one of my favorites. I reread it every year. And now the Burn Operating System is just the modified versions off of that for being a franchise organization, where you have a parent company and you have a franchise system with corporate locations, and then kind of a flywheel of businesses that all support one another to create the enterprise. And I think it's a myth that you have to be so smart, you know, that you just come up with your own thing. You should, like, if you want speed and speed is business to you, well, Gino, I mean, he interviewed 20,000 businesses and put together the best of the best. And so we just don't try to recreate the wheel if we don't have to.
You know, so we don't necessarily talk a lot about it on the show, but I am such a fan. I came to it through the book Rocket Fuel. And
yeah.
I think they've got like 6 books in the series now, right? Anyways.
Yeah, there's a bunch. I was just looking for it. I got it somewhere around here. I got it in my office. I got all of them scattered around here somewhere.
But I had 2 clients. One guy who, you know, he's a little older than me, but he's got like 12 companies worth maybe $250 million personally. And I was like, "How do you do it?" He's like, "Oh, I just do EOS." And then I have another client who's a couple of years younger than me, worth maybe $200 million personally. 6 different companies. And same thing, EOS. He's like, he's not running 6 companies. He's the visionary at 6 companies. And he has such strong integrators at all these companies that, like, in fact, his one, possibly the biggest of the companies, his integrator asked him to stop coming to the team meetings because he's giving everybody whiplash with his good ideas.
Oh, right? Was he? Yeah.
And for me, like, I think what I loved so much is, like, I read that first chapter of Rocket Fuel about crazy visionaries, and I was like, oh, I don't have to pretend I'm one of these regular people that can, like, sit at a desk for 8 hours in a row. Like, you know, like, I don't have to apologize that I can't do things that, like, $5 an hour employees can do. Like, it's okay to embrace that, like, I am always trying to put 100 pounds of stuff in a 50-pound bag, because I can just have, like, this other system with other kinds of people that cover, like, the other 97% of the equation that I don't cover. And it's just like, you know, we had our VI meeting yesterday, you know?
Oh, nice.
And for me, it's what I like about it is, my whole life I've been told I'm doing things wrong, I have too much ADD, right? But then I, like, you know, have gone and made, you know, a lot more money than anybody I grew up with, right?
Amen.
And so it's hard to square. It's like, I'm doing it all wrong, but then this works. But then, you know, typical ADD entrepreneur, my net worth had, like, the big roller coaster, big up, big down, big up, big down. Yeah. That's the reason I, like, got really into Warren Buffett about 10 years ago.
Okay.
Compound interest investing, and I'm doing, like, commercial real estate now. Like, I'm going to keep it this time.
You know, yeah. Well, you know, you bring up a good point. I think, you know, people will believe what they want to believe in, you know, and it there's just this certain, you know, I see it across in a franchise organization, right? I don't think it's any secret that in a organization our size, you're going to have a top 10%, you're going to have a bottom 10%, and some people are going to leave and some people are going to stay. And, you know, when you look across the system and, you know, the playbook's the same, the demographics are the same, the validation process is the same, the playbook, the operating system's all the same, and one person can be at number one and one person can be at number 394, you know, with the same exact tools in their hand. And it goes to show that, like, you know, and then I look in the top 10% and there's like people's personality that a normal person would look at and be like, oh, they're not the top one in the top 1% of earners in this country, right? Because success has its own definition to everybody. And, you know, to say that you have to be extroverted and optimistic, you know, to be successful isn't always true. I mean, I think
Have you ever heard of Charlie Munger?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like the most pessimistic guy on the planet.
Optimistic.
No, not at all. And so, yeah, it's just whatever you believe in. Like if you believe this attitude, this belief system, this amount of effort will lead to success, well, then what is success? Well, then whatever your definition of that, you're going to find strategies, beliefs that reinforce it. And so I'm all for it. It's really interesting to see in a franchise system like mine, though, just the different dynamics and personalities like you're talking about.
Yeah. By the way, since you're, I think your official title is co-founder and visionary. Is that right?
Visionary. Yeah. So I've read Rocket Fuel and I basically follow that to a T. If Morgan and I always ask, what would Gino do?
I love it. I got two book recommendations for you then.
One,
he actually talks about in chapter one, Hunters in a Farmer's World. Amazing. If you identify with chapter one from Rocket Fuel, like, you're going to like that book.
Okay.
And then the other one is Driven by Dr. Douglas Brackman. Do you know that one? He works with all those Navy SEALs.
I got that here. Hand me that book set. Driven. Yeah, that red one. Yeah, and that's the one. I think this is the one you're talking about right here. This one?
Yeah, I love that one. Do you like it?
That's yeah, I do. I got to page... I'll do this. I'll get like halfway through books, and then I'll just stop, and then I'll start reading something else, and then I'll come back to it, and... I got to page 166 and then I stopped.
I like it.
I should finish it now that you mentioned it.
I can't read books because I'm always thinking like, oh, I could be getting work done right now or something. I'm an audiobook guy because I can, you know, I can get through, you know, I speed them up and I can get through a few in a week, right?
That's interesting though. That's interesting. What do you think about, okay, so then the opposite could be like, okay, so then you would say that if you're listening to audiobook and then doing another task, then in essence, you're multitasking. I think that it's also an interesting, interesting suggestion to say, okay, well, what if I only listened to the podcast and did nothing else and got every nugget out of it? Have you ever tried it that way? Or have you always been a multitasker?
Yeah, absolutely. So like I listen to maybe 2 to 4 books a week. Okay. And, but it's like at 3.5 speed, but like, so it's usually while I'm driving, doing dishes, something that doesn't take a lot of, conscious thought. Right. But I'm also like, I listen to it the first time just to see if it's any good. And then I file it in my memory of like, okay, when I have that problem, I know what book I got to review. And so like, I feel like at 3.5 speed, I can afford to go through it 3 or 4 times and I'm still at the same time thing. And so, like, I went through it once to see if it's any good, and then I go back. And like, I used to, like, I don't know. I used to think I was special because I'd listened to hundreds of books, right? And then, like, one of my favorite authors of all time, Ryan Holiday, like, The Obstacle is the Way, if you know those books, he was, like, kind of said, like, quit being so proud of yourself for reading a bunch of books. Why don't you, like, pick the best books and listen to those ones over and over? And so, you know, the best books I'll listen to 15 and 20 and 25 times kind of thing. And I'm a little less worried about like adding to my library all the time. I'm probably like, if you don't count like 400 books in the Jason Bourne genre, if you're talking like just, you know, marketing, investing, philosophy, business books, it's maybe like 1,000-ish, right? But I'm not like adding to it quickly because I'm mostly like, I might read a new book a week and the other three are rereading the best books, you know? Mm.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And then I definitely have like those ones that are the best books, like 80-20 Principle by Richard Koch or One Thing by Gary Keller. I have to read the One Thing by Gary Keller like every week, parts of it, to remind myself like to quit multitasking, right? The best books, like I definitely like sit still, you know, I sit still and like think hard, listen, pause, think, you know, driving down the road, hit pause, don't turn the radio on, you know, just have like the quiet time. to try and see where the brain will go with it. But
yeah, that's a, yeah, there's, I think it, that's definitely an interesting way to look at it. I probably go more toward, like, when you're talking about, you know, entertainment, you know, versus education. I'm the 10 book guy that will just make the, after the 100th time you've read them, they'll just be torn apart and like you'll have to get a new one because you've gone through it so many times. I think that's definitely more my camp. And then if I want to be entertained, it's usually an autobiography or a biography. I like different eras. I like Ryan Holiday. He writes about the Stoics, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, who just did the Elon Musk biography, the Steve
Walter
Jobs
Isaacson
biography. Walter Isaacson. I like him. He did a Ben Franklin one. I just got done listening to. So
the
last one I got done listening to was a Ben Franklin one. Those autobiographies I think he did. Did he not?
Oh, autobiography.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I think it was. It'd been a while, but yeah, no, so, I mean, reading keeps, you know, reading, writing. If you can read and write, you can think. And if you can think and write, you can read. And yeah. I think those three disciplines, you know, you hear a lot of philosophers talk about how dangerous that is.
So two things I really want to talk about is new client acquisition and retention. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, like, on a whole, you know, America has not, you know, we were going to work in the field all day. You know, you look at the amount of energy we're consuming in the mouth, right? But then we go sit. You sit in our car on our way to sit at work, right?
Right.
So this idea of like getting people away from Netflix, getting people to come expend calories when real life doesn't demand it from them because they're, you know, I don't know, 100 years ago, like 95% of us worked on farms to produce food, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then people became factory workers and now we're not. So that's my first one is like the competition of doing nothing, how you overcome that. And then once they've decided to do something, having them decide Burn Bootcamp is for them. So let's start with new client acquisition. Specifically, and feel free to tell me I've got the wrong premise here, but I would love your thoughts on those two sets of competition.
Well, you can't make... Do you have kids?
4.
Okay. You can't make them do anything they don't want to do. You've got to persuade them.
Not for very long.
Not for very long, and definitely not as a habit. And so I think it's the same way as adults. You can't make somebody do something that even they know is good for them that they don't want to do. And the answer to your question is new client acquisition is, the messaging is really important from a brand perspective. But my opinion on branding is that you get to make your brand and you get to listen to your members or your customers and you get to re-represent that brand, but they get to represent in their own mind and around their coffee table a million times over. So in effect, I put out my brand and then it means something to them. My brand is millions of brands. And so we got to keep doing that. That's our job, right? And to that person, when they hear the message in January 23 versus January 24, they could be in a different mindset and they could have a different amount of pain. And that's usually what gets them from doing nothing to doing something is the pain. And then when they come in the doors, it's our job to make sure that they know that they didn't come in because they wanted to get fit and tone like they thought they wanted to. And like everybody says, when they do come into the gym, our job to, you know, our version of closing people is to show them what they really want, right? What they're really there for. And that's some deep emotional connection back to themselves or somebody in their life that they love. And if we can get them to uncover that in the first 45 minutes, you know, with them, listen, we're going to have somebody who has a platform to now completely transform their life. And, you know, so it's the pain threshold that makes them look in the mirror, hear that message a year apart and just be like, man, enough pain for me. This feeling is much more painful than me getting in my car and driving to the gym. So I think pain and pleasure, the natural universal motivators come into play big time, especially when it's with things like demanding training. You know, people can exercise, like go cycling, and that seems to be easier for people than if they did some activity like pickleball or walking, you know, but to do demanding training, meaning like now I'm going to demand more of myself than anybody is going to demand of me all day. There's there's the psychological element to that, that, you know, you can switch that on physiologically and boom, psychology flips on right with it. And so we don't have to worry about the mind-body connection necessarily. And I'm sure you have a holistic approach to what you do and an angle in which you do that through. And I have probably a very similar holistic approach, and my angle in which I look at that life through is the body. And if we can get our body to do what we want our body to do, we can get our mind to do what we want our mind to do. That's for sure.
You know, I love this idea of the emotional resonance there, because, you know, we can all look at social media or the movies and see some beautiful toned person and go like, I wish I looked like that. But that probably goes away a lot quicker than I want to be at my grandkids' wedding. I want, you know, like some sort of emotional resonance.
Yeah, it needs to be a deep connection, and one that you write down, going back to like thinking and writing and reading, write it down and read it, because it is also easy to push that emotional resonance to the side and compartmentalize in a bucket, because that's what we're really good at as humans. We can experience a negative or a positive emotion. We can feel guilty for being successful, or we can feel guilty for being not successful, you know? And so for me, it's like you're saying, that emotional resonance, it's connecting deep with it, but then capturing it, writing it down, and rereading it and repeating it, and almost like adding logs to the fire.
Yeah. So what does this look like from... What's an example of your messaging, and then an example of that first 45 minutes of helping them? Okay, now we got them in the door. Now let's help them, you know, tie this to something that really matters in life.
Yeah, I mean, you could look at top of the funnel advertising. So our media agency, Burn Media Company. All right, I mentioned the flywheel of all the companies that we have in the Burn Brands conglomerate, right? Burn Bootcamp's the biggest one. Burn Media is our sister agency. And, you know, so we start at the top of the funnel there, and we might put out something like You Belong Here, right? And a picture of, you know, 3 to 4 women really lifting each other up, high-fiving each other. One might be, you know, pretty fit. The other one might be on day one on her journey, right? And that might be obvious just through the creative when you see that. And then we've got this process, like, you know, the Burn operating system or the entrepreneur operating system will ask us to have a proven process. So ask us, what is that process that's going to fulfill the marketing promise that you made? You belong here. Okay, well, then we want to match that marketing message, not only to the landing page and through the automatic emails and text conflows that come out, but we also want that to resonate physically, because we are a physical community. Yeah, we have technology underneath it, but that's only exists to empower that creativity and community connection. So when they come in the door, it's called the blue carpet experience. And much like when Ritz-Carlton, you step in the, you know, Salt Lake City Ritz-Carlton, and they know your name and your wife's favorite wine and how you like your pillows, and, you know, they've got a handwritten note for you. They know what you like. They're the Ritz-Carlton. They're going to follow through on their promise to over-deliver. And we do that same thing. We do it through high fives, knowing your name ahead of time before you come into the gym, and learning about who you are right away. Not what we have, not what Burn Bootcamp has to offer. You know, we got rid of the whole do a gym tour thing in this industry. Like, it's not about us. Why would we get, you don't give a crap what we have here. What you care about is you. And so we need to spend our time not giving you some arbitrary gym tour, but we got to find out about you. And between the top of the funnel messaging that comes from the sister media company down to the every location, right? We have a connection there that lets people know that our brand has integrity, and you walk through these doors, it's the real deal. You're going to actually get and more what you expected to.
Yeah, that's great. When you think about getting this feeling to resonate across, you know, again, almost 400 locations now, you know, signed 550, and like this volume that you've done, like we'll just go ahead and pretend it's already March and you've done your billion in revenue total. Okay,
sounds good.
But
to
like,
me.
Let's talk about this, like, you know, $1 billion of sales success secret, where obviously this is not only in the gym that you are physically present, like getting that process to actually be lived all across the country. Can you give us kind of the $1 billion success secret there, of getting the water to the end of the row?
I'm not sure it's quite a secret or that your mind's going to be blown, but what immediately comes to my mind is that the team is a reflection of their coach and the coach's standard. So it starts with me at the top and it starts with Morgan. And then we have a franchise partner network. We have our you know, us here at HQ, 400 of us plus our gyms. Then we have our franchise partner network. And then we have their teams. And then we have our members. And then we have their families, right? And so we go that deep in terms of who we think that we're responsible for providing with health and happiness. And so I don't think it's a secret. I just think it's consistently looking at yourself in the mirror, eating humility and saying, where are the gaps that I have in my own character? Because I know the gaps in my character, when revealed, will then reveal gaps in the company's character. And if I do this over and over and over, and I don't get, if I don't fall in love with my brand and myself, and I fall in love with what I'm doing for people, it removes the ego from needing to grow and getting, you know, quote unquote, on top or making it or whatever. And, you know, going out and doing what most people do when they make a few million bucks is go spend it on stupid stuff and go blow it. And then they're back to square one. And it's like, you didn't even change through that process. You got worse through the process because you found out that you can't handle money and you don't know how to, you know, contribute to your society when you're given resources. And so I'm always just reminding myself of how important it is to live the life that I will talk about living with other people. Like, you know, and I think as simple as that sounds, it's a mismatch in society that a lot of people say one thing this way and then talk about, you know, their actions might not always line up. And, you know, I think that's why CEOs in all the Disney movies and all the Nickelodeon movies and all the cartoons, the CEOs always get a bad rap, which kind of annoys me. You know, it's like The Lorax. Have you ever seen that movie? I know you got four kids. Okay, well, the bad guy in Lorax is the CEO that charges the community to breathe. He bottles air and charges people to breathe. It's like the literally the worst form of, like, you know, capitalism, like, out there. You know, you can't charge people to breathe, especially in a movie. So yeah, I just think more of us, people like us, should realize how important our actions are.
So I guess maybe a piece of advice there. If you are the owner of the company and it is doing well and you don't have a boss, right? What kind of things do you recommend, or what kind of things do you do to choose humility? You know, like Mike Tyson says, if you do not choose humility, humility would be visited upon you.
Yeah. Right? Yeah,
so
for sure.
I'm interested, like, what's a routine? What's a habit? What's a something that helps you choose it even when you're not being forced to?
I'm listening all the time. You know, I'm out in the field in our locations. Every Monday, I've got a 4-hour block where I'm getting on with all of our franchise partners in a 6-month rotation. And, you know, there's 600 of us now that make up the organization. And, you know, the community is growing larger and larger. And I've got to do my job as the visionary. One of my jobs as a visionary is key relationships, right? And there's no more key relationship than with those who are helping build the organization, right? Morgan and I have this big dream, and it's an ambitious one. And we've been able to thankfully partner with a lot of people who want to fit their also big dreams inside of our even bigger dream. And us doing that together, we take that very seriously as not only a fiduciary, but also as family. You know, this is a family company. And so I would treat them the same way I would treat my sister's investment, if you will. And so here's what I'll say is that in the long run, Burn Bootcamp will not only change the way that people approach their workouts in this country. I think what Burn Bootcamp is also going to do is show people a confidence that transcends fitness. And part of what I'm doing here with you is to talk about this incredible story that we've had. We've flown under the radar, much like I know you're a reader, Sam Walton did with Walmart, Made in America, if you've ever read that book. They grew to like 42 stores, which are, you know, big square footage. It's a lot of square footage. No one even knew who they were. You know, like, we've been flying under the radar. We're not connected to capital markets. We're a family-owned company. The magic is in the community. It's all here. It's just like this tipping point that's waiting to bubble over. And I forgot what your original question was, but I felt compelled to say that, you know, the world has really embraced us without the world really knowing us yet. I mean, we've got 115,000 paying members, all the numbers and stuff that you mentioned. Yeah, we're just getting started. And I forgot where you started with that question, but.
No, you answered it great. It kind of leads to my second question. So you think about this, you know, hitting the $1 billion in sales here in the next 60 to 90 days or whatever. And, you know, your industry is famous for poor retention. And my guess is you are not hitting those numbers without having better than average retention. I would love to hear your thoughts about what you feel like is working to have the kind of retention to do $1 billion in sales.
Yes, that's a great question. So how are you going to get to a billion if your bottom is falling out all the time? Well, you know, the bottom is about 3% in the industry. Some months were better. Some months were right at it. Some months were over it, but very few and far between are we over it. I would say that once you're at about average, then retention should no longer be a word that is used because it takes your focus off of top of funnel acquisition. And I always had this intuition that, hey, if we're at 2.5-3% attrition, that's like really good and we don't have a problem and we shouldn't try to fix something that's not broken. And then I got a chance to meet the founder of Planet Fitness, Michael Grondahl, and he told me, I said, what's one piece of advice that you know being in the fitness industry that if you were to tell somebody right now, an executive like me, to look out for, what would it be? And that's what he said. He goes, retention is a waste of time unless there's a problem. He goes, everybody around you in your industry is going to focus on retention, 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 retention. And we kicked everyone's ass because we normalized our retention and then focused on marketing and top of the funnel. So I like it. I think that's the right answer.
Interesting.
And yeah.
I was not expecting that answer.
Yeah. I think it is. I think it is right. It makes a lot of sense. People do stuff. They're going to move. They're going to change their mind. They're, you know, trying to stop all that is like you're just running in circles, chasing your tail.
Interesting. Okay. Well, give us another $1 billion in sales success secret.
All right. I don't know how much of this is a secret, but I like to say that execution over epiphany. Right? Okay. Execution over epiphany means that you don't need to have like a Peter Thiel $1 billion idea, right? You don't need to be the person that comes up with something so unique. I think that what that does is shut a lot of people out of even playing the game. This is a competitive, business is a competitive sport, don't get me wrong. Much more competitive than baseball, that's for sure. There's many more players, but there's also much more opportunity. And you don't need to have this like home run idea. If you, like I'm like the 377th bootcamp to ever exist in the fitness industry. And we came in 2012 after it was already saturated and just flat out dominated. And it wasn't because we had a net new idea. Maybe we had a merger of ideas and together they all became net new, right? But it wasn't a net new concept. It was something people had heard about. Just like, yeah, no, you should go start that restaurant. You should go start that fitness company. You should go start the next, you know, PE firm. You should start the next charity. You should start the next anything that you're passionate about, because as much as there is saturation and competition, people that are competitive with themselves and not other people are always going to win. And so it doesn't matter what you're selling. You could be selling pens and you're going to go beat Ballpoint at some, you know, I'm not even sure if that's a brand. Pilot, that's what it's called. You're going to beat Pilot at some point if Pilot's management starts to suck and yours continues to grow. And so I just think it stops a lot of people from getting started in the first place, thinking they need to have some crazy idea that, you know, people hear and it's like a $1 million idea. The best ideas ever are like the most, you know, the ideas with the highest probability to work are the ideas that everybody has. And the difference is going to be your execution, not how brilliantly smart you are and how high your IQ is and all that. Because let's face it, 90% of people are always going to work for 10% of people, because what the 10% of people are doing is really, really hard. Most of them don't even make it 5 years. And most of them end up being on the other 90%. So for all those people out there in corporate America and you got an idea, like, go after it, you know? Don't let anybody stop you. That's what Morgan did.
So let's talk about that then. When you think about like $1 billion in sales level execution, what's a mantra? How do you sum it up? What's that kind of execution like compared to average execution?
That's a good question. The first word that comes to my mind, above average execution, the word anticipation, knowing the road ahead, knowing what's coming down the line, which I think, going back to rocket fuel, which is why visionary and CEO, that split in that role, for those of just a quick recap. So the visionary, the CEO reports to the visionary only has that direct report, and then the CEO has the rest of the accountability chart underneath their leadership. And I think that has been next level for us, because it allows me to get up and out and see the road ahead, have future state org charts for our talent, be able to, you know, see around the corner before, you know, the CEOs that might have all of these different tie downs to their organization, before they have the time to look up and see it, I get to be doing that full time. So I think that is part of amazing execution, accountability. You know, nobody wants to have the hard conversation. Nobody wants to be the person in the office that has to sit somebody else down and say, hey, I observed you doing this and you said you were going to do that, but you did it this way. Explain to me how I'm wrong in observing that, right? Or whatever the communication style is, we've got to have those conversations. And so I noticed at the top of our issues list every quarter was communication. So I'm like, and then every company I talk to, I was like, what's your top five problems? Communication is always in there. I'm like, what does this even mean, this communication? Well, isn't that everything? Like, if, you know, if we're going to say communications in our top five issues, isn't that everything? Like, you communicate, how else do you do business? So you're saying, by saying communication, everything's wrong, right? So no, okay, so what is communication? What part of communication? What process? What broke down? Oh, this person? Okay, let me go to that person, not that department. Let me go to that person and let me fix it on the ground with them, and let them know that it's okay that they made the mistake, but we're going to fix it. We're going to address it. And so I saw this consistently happening, and I developed this mechanism that really stems from the psychology. Carl Jung, you probably know Carl Jung is psychoanalytical therapist, Swedish. I think he's Swedish. You basically distill down psychoanalytical therapy and you put it into five questions. Hey, tell me how that was, you know, whatever that thing was. You know, would you like some feedback? Or from my perspective, would you like some feedback? You know, what are you going to do next time? And it's just this basic feedback loop, and you can start it so easily. And now all 6,000 people in the organization use the feedback loop, and it's created this accountability to executing what we said we were going to execute. And everybody's comfortable doing it because I do it with Morgan, and we've made it a part of what this organization does. And so, yeah, I think the key to long-term accountability and sustainability, to mitigate that retention question you asked about, is accountability within the leadership, and that will trickle down the organization.
Yeah. So maybe final question here. I'm interested in your mentality. So once you've stabilized your attrition, what's an example of something that you're doing to excel at new client acquisition that maybe the competition isn't?
So, okay, you can, in marketing, this is my craft, right? Marketing, branding. If you give me a vertical, if you said, hey, pick a C-suite, like pick a position, I'm CMO all day long. And when you look at top of the funnel marketing, companies get really comfortable and they tend to keep doing what's always worked. Meaning, like, Coca-Cola was like one of the last to buy into social media marketing, right? Like, McDonald's was like one of the last to buy into social media marketing because they're legacy and they're big, and what works works, and all power to you. I think to be hyper competitive nowadays, especially in my industry and coming up fighting some juggernauts, we've had to try different things. We've had to have this, we call it our invention space. We've had to have this like little invention space where we're able to throw new ideas out there, test them, have some budget to test, you know, CTV ads. It was our most recent one in like Hulu. And it's so cool to see your brand next to, like, you know, the NBA playoffs or whatever on Hulu or whatever, you know, the UFC fight, to see your brand come up. It's really cool. You know, we're dabbling into, I say dabbling intentionally because we're not doing a Super Bowl commercial, but we're sponsoring the Super Bowl internally at the event, foot in the door, trying new things, right? Being able to, hey, when TikTok rolled out, bam, we don't even, we don't even think about it. We just go. Everybody, all hands on deck. We don't make it over, you know, bureaucratic and red tape. You know, we don't put a bunch of nonsense in the way. It's part of being a family-owned company is you can market and pivot the messaging different pretty quickly. So yeah, it's that. It's being able, it's being willing to find better ways to do something that's already working. And, you know, now it's going to be, what's the big thing? You know, we've kind of hit all the marketing buckets. Now the big thing, that big brand awareness tipping point, you know, that comes off the back of one thing and one thing only. And that's or two things, but one thing in the short term, either a long time, which we don't have, right? We've got to just let the brand reputation keep rolling, or the trust of somebody that has already spent a long time building trust, like a celebrity equity partner, let's say. And so we're in that market. And yeah, the tipping point for us will be that. We're building out a brand champion program where there's three levels of influencers. We've always had an influencer program, but now really taking that to the next level. And yeah, so marketing is business, in my opinion. Marketing is business. You got to be good at it. And if you're not, you're going to have a really tough time. You better have one hell of a unique product or service if you're not a good marketing company.
I love it. Well, listen, if people want to check out your podcast and YouTube, they want to check out the brand, where are the best places on the internet?
YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, those three spots, the Devin Klein Show. It's a little picture of me kind of in blue pointing down. Right there, you can't miss it. I'm pointing right at the show. That's where you're supposed to click.
I love it. Well, thanks for doing this.
All right, man. Hey, thanks, Jess. I appreciate it. Let's go skiing, buddy. We got to go.
Bye, everyone.